As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Is there a little sign of concern in the banking system in the Eurozone? Yes, but it's still very, very contained. The U.S. pursued a very aggressive policy early on, and that is having payoff several years later.
You have a fundamental problem of architecture, and that's why any small issue is amplified immediately in the marketplace.
Bloomberg Surveillance, your link to the world of economics, finance, and investment on Bloomberg Radio.
Good morning, I'm Michael McKee. It is 7 a.m. on Wall Street. It looks like a good day to pull the covers back over your head. Janet Yellen fails to calm investors' nerves. Oil drops again, and there's a lot of red on the screen. Why? And what's next on Surveillance this morning? Some of it disappointing earnings. Societe Generale reporting earnings down 35% in the most recent quarter. That adds to concern about European banks. European indexes, very red. The Stock 600 down 3.6%. That's 11 points on that index. The DAX, one of the worst performing indexes in the world so far this year, down 2.9%, 258 points. In the across the English Channel, the FTSE is off 138 points right now, 2.5%. Here in, Sweden's Riksbank, Tom, cutting rates even more negative, negative 50 basis points. They say they may intervene in currency markets as well. We'll have to talk about that a little bit later. The SEKI is down against the euro and the dollar, though. Here in the U.S., equities following oil lower. West Texas, 26.34. Down more than 4%. Brent crude, $30.29, down 1.75%. Bob Cinch writing in from Amherst Pierpont this morning saying maybe oil is headed to capitulation. We can talk about why he thinks so a little bit later on. As I mentioned, U.S. futures following oil down. S&P futures off 43 points. This is S&P. This isn't Dow futures. S&P futures off 43 points, 2.2%. Dow futures down 346 points, 2.2%. NASDAQ futures the worst. They're off 98 points, 2.5%. And I haven't even talked about bonds. Bonds are falling. Yields are bonds are rising. Yields falling. 1.55 for the 10-year, 99 basis points. Below 1% for the 5-year, 59 basis points for the 2-year, 2013 levels. And German and British bonds are at record lows this morning.
I think you continue with your terrific sum. I just want to say for Global Wall Street listening that all of this is massively quadratic. I just did a log chart of Japanese yen intraday, and it is not falling. Plunging is media talk. It's just accelerating. The convexities that we're seeing across all asset classes aren't like yesterday, Mike, and aren't like a week ago.
Well, that's a shameless plug for the Bloomberg Radio Plus app, because you'll send that out to everybody who has one.
Going out right now.
Exactly what you're talking about. Well, Bill Lee is head of North American Economics for Citigroup, and he is taking shelter here in the sub-basement of the Bloomberg World Headquarters with us as we close the submarine door and try to keep the world out. Yesterday, Janet Yellen went up to Capitol Hill and said things aren't that bad. Is nobody listening?
Isn't that amazing, Mike, that when you actually look at the real data, and Janet Yellen was in fact pointing to the employment data, and she said, you know, things are doing quite well, and yet the markets have panicked like crazy. There's not one person out there who wants to take on any risk. So we have this massive disconnect between the financial markets and the real economy, a massive disconnect between central banks, the way they see the economy, and the way the markets view the central banks. And I think part of that is because central banks have lost their way. Central banks have lost their role as as being anchor for the financial markets, because the Fed now has become so responsive to financial markets that markets can't count on them to stick to the macro fundamentals and say, you know, our mandate is maximum employment and price stability. Instead, it's calming the markets, and that's where the current concern is.
This is very important. Very important. Are you saying that Janet Yellen and the Fed and other central banks have lost credibility with the markets now?
No. In fact, they have massive credibility. The credibility is absolutely guaranteed they're going to try to do something to calm the markets. They will delay interest rate normalization. They'll do whatever it takes, as Draghi says, whatever it takes to keep markets from falling apart. And they did that in 98 when it was LTCM and the Asian crisis, and that was exactly the right thing to do. They did that in 2008. Yeah. That was exactly the right thing to do. They're doing it now. That's exactly the wrong thing to do, because the real economy, as Janet Yellen was saying, is doing okay. Sources of weakness, sectoral, energy, geographic, emerging markets in China, political, the lack of a transparent framework in China and the confidence, lack of confidence we have in the leadership there to pull it off. Those are the sources of weakness, very well identified, very well known. Is there a sign of contagion? Right now, none of us can find it.
All right. Well, a couple things going on here, folks. We're going to give you more data checks today, and we're going to also highlight within our interviews what's moving right now. What's moving right now is a 10-year U.S. yield in a solid 11 basis points, 1.5606. Good morning, everyone. Bloomberg Surveillance. Brought to you by Invesco. Investing isn't about meeting benchmarks. It's about achieving goals. Find out how Invesco's high conviction approach can help. Visit Invesco.com/high conviction. Mike, a lot to talk about in the markets. Why don't you continue with Dr. Lee?
Well, let's set a predicate here for what we're talking about. You're relatively optimistic about the economy. Your indicators don't show recession ahead, the recession that is being now priced into financial markets.
In fact, everyone in the world seems to believe not only is there a global recession, and by the way, our house view, and Willem Bouwder is my boss, we are believing that there is a global recession, meaning the global economy is growing at slower than potential. Absolutely no question about it. But where is that weakness coming from? China, emerging markets, the China supply chain, and the commodity oil sector at the related countries there. When you look at the advanced economies, especially the United States, again, those are the same sources of weakness. GDP is growing much slower pace than domestic purchases. Why net exports? Why energy?
Can I ask the money dumb question of the morning? Is Janet Yellen, 10 a.m. this morning, is she central banker to the world, to that emerging market? Does she need to provide the leadership to the emerging market so they make what we all agree are tough decisions?
And if that's what she claims to be, she's going to be fired, because her job is to be the central banker to the United States. And the United States' policy objectives are maximum U.S. employment, maximum price stability in the U.S., meaning 2% inflation in the U.S. That's her job. The fact that she does it with keeping in mind the rest of the world means that she recognizes the U.S. is special. The U.S. is the largest economy in the world, and we've got to be a good citizen. Absolutely. But our goal is not to stabilize the Chinese stock market.
To a certain extent, is she chasing her tail? The Fed talks about raising interest rates here because they're worried about slack going out of our economy because we're growing faster than potential. When she does that, the dollar goes higher and it rebounds back into growth in the United States.
You hit it right in the head. That's where the problem is, right? The transmission mechanism for monetary policy used to be short rates go up, long rates go up, and then it sort of kills off the housing sector, and that's how we slow down the economy. Now, because the rest of the world is piling into the long end, the long end doesn't have a chance to go up anymore. And instead, the transmission channel is through the exchange rate. So when Janet Yellen says, we're going to be normalizing interest rates while the rest of the world is going down, that means the dollar appreciates. And the minute Janet Yellen says, we're on schedule, the dollar picks up.
I want to sum here because we've got to do an extended data check, Bill Lee. Folks, stay with us. Market's really moving. There's a lot of moving parts here. And a guy with you with a fancy parchment, fancy degrees, you can keep track of the parts, the Newtonian mechanics, and all that. I want you to summarize this for the dumbest person listening besides me, which is it's a search for economic growth. That's
Absolutely.
Really what this is about. Where does that growth come, or the rate of change of growth come for the world?
Right now, if the world is relying on monetary policy to get you that growth, it means you got to steal it from somebody. You got to steal it from someone who's appreciating. It used to be that by lowering interest rates, you grabbed it from the future. You manufactured more capital.
Okay, but to Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders' success, it's a mercantile world, is what you're saying.
We have been reduced to a mercantile world because monetary policy is now limited to exchange rate mechanisms for the transmission of its competitiveness.
Okay. Bonus round. Michael Barr, hold my hand here. We got to sing Kumbaya. Okay, we're going to sing Kumbaya. I'm going to send out the best paper ever written on mercantilism. I'll find it out on the internet. Jacob Viner, 1948, which completely redefined the post-World War II analysis of a zero-sum game. This is why you listen to Bloomberg Surveillance, folks. So I'll send you out papers that are 60 years old that still are germane today. Let me do a data check. Futures, negative 37. A little bit lower earlier, Dow futures, negative 307. The 10-year yield is the frontline story right now, 1.5691. We just contacted Steve Major at HSBC. He's in endless meetings with his bank this morning. We hope to have Mr. Major on Bloomberg Radio tomorrow with his really outlier call of a 150. He looks like the genius du jour right now. West Texas, 26.37 and accelerating lower, down $1.07. Brent crude like a rock at $30.30. The yen was in two big figures, 111.42 on euro yen, 126.29, showing relative yen strength to the euro. And I might point out, gold on a tear up $41, 12.36, the bull market bounce.
7:10 on Wall Street. Let's check in with Michael Barr and get the latest world and national headlines. Michael.
Mike, Tom, thank you very much. Defense Secretary Ash Carter says he sees more than 24 countries contributing to the war against the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq to endorse a U.S. plan for accelerating the campaign this year. Carter is at NATO headquarters in Brussels, where today he will lay out details of the campaign plan in a meeting with allies and non-NATO partners such as Saudi Arabia and Iraq. North Korea has ordered the military takeover of a factory park that was the last major symbol of cooperation with South Korea. The move follows Seoul's announcement that it's pulling out of the industrial park to punish North Korean leader Kim Jong-un for recent nuclear and missile tests. The Senate today will likely vote to approve a permanent ban on taxing internet access as part of a wide-ranging measure that would also revamp trade laws. Global news, 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists. I'm Michael Barr. Mike, Tom.
Michael Barr, thanks so much. Again, stay with us. Extra data checks through this morning with markets on the move. Futures, negative 37, with Bill Lee of Citigroup, Bloomberg Surveillance.
Bloomberg Surveillance is brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network. When it's time to change the conversation, talk with a broker-dealer RIA that's ready to listen. Call 866-462-3638 or visit commonwealth.com to learn more.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moskow. This update's brought to you by National Realty. 30% returns on cash and rented real estate. Find them at NRIA.net. U.S. stock index futures are following oil prices lower, with investors shunning risk worldwide as Asian markets reopen to join a global sell-off. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures down 39 points. Dow E-mini futures down 326. NASDAQ E-mini futures down 93. That's down 2.3%. DAX in Germany is down 2.9%. CAC in Paris down 4%. FT100 down 2.4%. 10-year Treasury up 30 seconds. The yield 1.56%. NYMEX crude oil down 4.25% at $1.17 to $26.28 a barrel. COMEX gold up 3.5% or $42.10 at $12.36.70 an ounce. The euro, $1.1342. The yen, 111.38. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thanks so much. I just sent out UniCredit and Deutsche Bank charts, both banks, as a proxy for European banking. Breaking down now, UniCredit very close to new lows. Deutsche Bank not quite there yet, 13.35 euros on the European quote with the intraday 13.03. But, you know, there we are. We just heard Stephen Major will be with us tomorrow from HSBC with a yield 1.57%. William Lee with us, working with Willem Bouwder at Citigroup, and he has such a storied career at the IMF that I think I want to digress here and talk about Lagarde's new mediocre. She looks like a genius, or I should say she and Blanchard in the PhD.
She looks like an optimist.
Yeah, well, there's that too. But the idea of a new mediocre, how do you filter that with your IMF experience?
You know, it used to be that the IMF were considered the stormtroopers. They were the ones who went around enforcing what was supposed to be the right policy. The new mediocre also applies to the IMF, I'm sad to say. As much as a genius as I think the world thinks Lagarde and Blanchard were, they have also lowered the standards by which policymakers are judged.
They got to be tougher.
They got to be tougher because they're allowing too many concessions, especially in the euro area. What was the problem in the euro area?
Ukraine, Greece,
it was structural, and the standard IMF program is you put in structural reforms. And everyone knows at the IMF it takes 5 to 10 years before those structural programs take hold. Meanwhile, monetary policy is supposed to fill in the gap. Instead, monetary policy has now become the primary tool, and structural reforms are being put in the background. Every time Draghi makes a speech, he says, "I'm waiting for you guys to use the time I'm buying you."
And he needs the IMF to get us back.
And he's got to get the IMF back there and say, you got to do the structural reforms. And instead, the IMF says, oh, take your time. We understand it's a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a lot of unemployment. And guess what? You're going to have a lot of political unrest. Well, that's exactly why it is that you put in these reforms at a time when you try to get the economy to be more efficient.
Everybody loves Madame Lagarde, but nobody in Italy, nobody in France is listening to her. They're not going to make policy based. I mean, you can get the IMF in there, but it's not going to change anything. It might change it for Greece because they need the IMF's money. But if you're not going to the IMF to borrow, you're not going to follow their prescriptions.
And that's why when I was on the U.S. desk at the IMF, it was considered the most prestigious job in the IMF because you were dealing with the top economists in the world. But it's also the most useless job because the IMF says, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah.
But, you know, what did the IMF do during the Asian crisis? They actually put in reforms. They said, look, you can't have fixed exchange rate regimes. You have to start floating. And that really did the world a tremendous service. What are they telling the world now? You got to put in structural reforms. And what's the world telling them? We'll do it later.
Is renminbi a floating exchange rate, a managed float? Is it one of Rogoff's 14 flavors of floating?
It can't be a float until you get the financial reforms in place. You can't have a float unless you have convertibility, unless you have capital
flows. That critical now for stability within the global system for China to do their part?
Because
Dominic Constant, Mike, is really big on this thing.
Price discovery, where the renminbi should be, the equilibrium price, is something you can't do with administrators. And that's where the markets come in. But you can't allow the markets to work unless you've got the infrastructure in place. Because right now, if you allowed the renminbi to float and with all these capital controls, you haven't a clue what you're doing. You don't know where the float is going to. It's probably going to be to a distorted price.
Do we have any idea of how tied to the macro economy of China is the renminbi?
That's a great point, Mike. That's a great point.
Hold on a minute. He's had three great points today, and I've had squat.
I'm getting warmed up
for
Wimbledon.
I'm not even working over here.
I've been talking to you on TV. But Mike, the connection between the financial sector and the real economy, it normally is tied together through the markets. But guess what? China has no markets. They're trying to create the markets, and instead they have administered banking. And administered banking means directed lending, and that's what got them into trouble before. And right now, they're trying to cut back on that, and at the same time, they need to do fiscal policy. How do you cut back on directed lending, which is the wrong thing to do, and at the same time, encourage somehow people to start spending money? That's a hard thing to do.
You hope you have a decent economy and a quiet, calm market environment to do it in, but they don't now. So they're not going to do it, are they? They're going to come to the rescue of these companies. They're going to prop everything up for the moment.
The hope and prayer for China right now are the structural reforms they're putting in place, meaning shifting toward the private sector, shifting toward consumption. Trouble is there's no transparency there. We haven't a clue how strong that sector is. And the lack of data, the lack of transparency into China is at the heart of not only China's crisis, but the global crisis.
I want to go back to your wonderful thoughts on mercantile and zero-sum world. If it's a zero-sum world, the I got to get the language right, the takee within it is the United States, They're going to take our growth. They're going to take our marginal rents,
like Donald
et cetera.
Trump there,
yeah,
so.
I am.
I use that metaphor because I want to be provocative, but it's true. When the only transmission channel or the main channel is through the exchange rate and not through lending,
you're taking from the
taking
U.S.
taking from the appreciating currency, and right now the only appreciating currency that matters is the U.S. That means you got to grab the U.S. growth. We don't have much to grab, right? We've got 2% GDP growth, maybe 3% domestic demand. Yeah. But for a small open economy like Sweden,
well,
that's a lot.
Quickly, Michael Hartnett over Bank of America Merrill Lynch making a lot of waves on some form of new collegial agreement called a new Plaza Accord. Where are you and Bowder on this?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think the worst thing you can do is to have policymakers coordinate exchange rates. Policymakers should do what they're supposed to do. Best policy for their own economies. The markets will determine where the equilibrium exchange rates will be. I don't think there's any instance besides one where the Plaza type agreements worked.
Okay, well, we could go on for what? Another 3 hours with William Lee of Citigroup. There is so much going on, and yes, we're efforting select guests on this select market move. Futures improve a little bit off of the carnage of 20 minutes ago, negative 34. Dow futures were negative 300, down negative 282. Stay with us worldwide. Bloomberg Surveillance.
Bloomberg Surveillance is brought to you by the Breakers Palm Beach. This winter, the Breakers Palm Beach is better than ever. Come see why. Visit thebreakers.com. Call 1-800-BREAKERS or contact your travel professional.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Morning at 7:30 on Wall Street. I'm Michael McKee, along with Tom Keene. We are looking at some of the corporate news that will affect trading today. PepsiCo says profit this year will rise about 2%. The strong dollar weighing on revenue. Earnings $4.66 a year. They forecast up from $4.57 last year. Analysts estimated $4.76. Fourth quarter profit was $1.06 a share. That matched analyst estimates. Societe Generale shares are down this morning by almost 12%. France's second largest bank posting fourth quarter profit that missed estimates. Twitter shares at the moment are down by 7%. The social media site adding no net users in the fourth quarter. Now let's check in with Michael Barr and get the latest world and national headlines. Michael?
Mike, the last four people to occupy a national wildlife refuge in eastern Oregon say they are giving themselves up to authorities in just a few hours. Last night, law officers surrounded the wildlife refuge in a tense standoff. The group led by Ammon Bundy seized the refuge on January 2nd to oppose federal land use policies. Bundy was later arrested and his father was taken into custody last night. NATO says it will deploy a significant number of troops to eastern Europe. It is a move to fight Russian aggression. Defense Secretary Ash Carter, speaking in Brussels today, says the U.S. would be providing significant assistance to the deterrent plan.
In particular, the budget quadruples funding for the European Reassurance Initiative to a total of $3.4 billion and broadens its focus to include deterring Russian aggression against NATO allies.
Carter also called on NATO coalition partners to do more to fight ISIS. Tensions between North and South Korea are escalating sharply after Pyongyang launched a long-range rocket over the weekend. North Korea says it's kicking South Koreans out of the country. Global news, 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists and more than 150 news bureaus from around the world. I'm Michael Barr. Mike?
Thank you, Michael. Now time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower. John?
All right, Mike. Rangers went to Pittsburgh to face a hot team. Penguins had won 6 of 7. Sidney Crosby, 10 goals in those 7 games, but the Rangers cooled him and the Penguins off, winning 3-0 for their fourth straight win. 34 saves for Henrik Lundqvist. The coach is Elaine Vigneault.
You know, we played their top players well. We made sure we had back pressure. We made sure we had numbers. And, you know, yes, they probably got a lot of shot attempts, but We were keeping it to the outside, and when they got on the inside, Hank made some real big saves for us.
Rangers host L.A. tomorrow night. Kings are in Brooklyn tonight facing the Islanders. Barclays Center last night, the Nets' 40th loss. So they go to the All-Star break after being outscored by Memphis in the third quarter, 39-18. The final was 109-90. Joe Johnson, 0-3. First time since 2003, Johnson didn't score a single basket. 937 games in a row, the longest active streak, eighth longest in NBA history. The 21st and next-to-last meeting between LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, as expected, the Cavs won. Golden State won in Phoenix. That's the Warriors' 11th win in a row. Overtime in Boston. Celtics 139, Clippers 134. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower.
Thank you, John. It is a red screen kind of day. S&P futures off by 32 points right now, 1.7%. Dow even is off by 270 points, 1.7%, believe it or not. Those are off their lows of the day. Dollar index falling today, 95.601. And the yen, the big currency mover of the day, 111.95. This is Bloomberg Surveillance. This is Bloomberg Surveillance. I'm Michael McKee, along with Tom Keene. It is going to be a tough day for traders. S&P, Dow, and NASDAQ futures all down by more than 1.75%. The Stock 600 in Europe is down by 10 points. That's a 3% drop on the day. And listen to this. 10-year yield, 1.57%. The 5-year, 101, and 60 basis points for your 2-year yield. It is setting up to be a rough morning. Time now for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report, brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, partnering with government and industry to apply the university's world-class research assets to innovate and spur economic growth. Learn more at njit.edu. Here's Patrice Sakara.
Good morning, Michael. Businesses are most concerned about cyber attacks. A survey by the Business Continuity Institute of 568 companies across 74 countries finds 85% fear a cyber attack, such as a malware or distributed denial of service attack. The number two, data breaches at 80%. There was also increasing concern about physical terrorism, vandalism, theft, and fraud. Flying to Europe may take less time, but coming back to the U.S. could take considerably more. British researchers studying climate change conclude a doubling of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere will speed up the jet stream 15% as it moves from west to east across the Atlantic, meaning a trip from London to New York could eventually take more than 7 hours. And that's this morning's Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report.
Patrice, thank you very much. West Texas Intermediate, 26.45, down 3.6% on the day. Brent crude, 30.32, down 1.75%. And, of course, when oil falls, so does the Russian ruble. Right now coming in at 79.7757. The MICEX index down 2% on the day in Russia, off 36 points. Daniel Hewitt, I'm sorry, is Barclays senior EMEA economist, and he covers Russia. And Daniel, last year in 2015, the Russian economy contracted, according to your figures, about 3.7%, and that was with oil in the $40 range. At $30 or in the 20s, the outlook for 2016 can't be very good.
No, Russia's still highly dependent upon oil for their economy, particularly the budget is linked to oil revenues. So Russia's economy is under a lot of pressure right now.
What can they do given the situation? Vladimir Putin has promised not to raise taxes until the next election, which is 2018. So does he have any options?
They don't have a lot of options, but one has to give the Russian government a lot of credit for having adjusted already quite a bit to lower oil prices. Both the monetary policy has done well by allowing the rouble to float rather than trying to protect the exchange rate. And fiscal policy has made adjustments in cutting back expenditures to a large extent, but still they're in for a lot more trouble on the fiscal side. The fiscal is particularly weak right now, and they don't have many options, in part because of their military commitments. They can't cut back their military spending because of the Syrian operations, et cetera. And so this limits their degrees of freedom. The other problem they have is in terms of financing with the sanctions, it's hard for them to obtain external financing also. So in the meantime, they're using up reserves. And as long as they hold up, I guess they can keep going.
How fast are they depleting them?
Well, they have used up they have a reserve fund which had something like $90 billion in it previously. It's now down to below $50 billion. And conceivably, if they have a bad fiscal year this year, they could use up the reserve fund entirely. They still have the National Welfare Fund with $50 to $70 billion in it, depending on how you measure it, usable $50 billion or so. So that gives them a couple more years of reserves to run deficits. Then they have to balance the budget after that or obtain financing someplace.
If they cut spending, that's going to reduce aggregate demand, though. So can they – well, obviously, they can just print money, but would they be willing to do that?
No. The central bank seems to be very determined to be an inflation-targeting bank. They just adopted – they have only been inflation-targeting for a little over a year, but they're quite serious about it, and I don't think they're willing to print a lot of money or let the monetary side go. No, I think it's up to the fiscal to somehow adjust itself to the new reality as best it can.
One of the questions rattling around the global energy markets is whether Russia would be willing to cut back on its oil production in order to drive the price higher.
Yes, that's a question that's sitting out there. I think at the governmental level, they're certainly considering this, because if combined actions can raise oil prices, they'll obviously improve their fiscal situation, even with some small cutbacks. However, it's not easy to coordinate with the somewhat private sector oil producers that exist in Russia. It wouldn't be easy to bring this about.
Daniel Hewitt is Barclays Senior Emerging Europe and Middle East Economist. We'll continue our conversation here as we follow the markets lower today, including the Russian stock markets. The RTS is down by almost 4% on the day. The MICEX off by 2%. And that's no different from what we're seeing around the world. The Stoxx 600 in Europe is down 3%. The FTSE is off by 2%. The DAX is off by 2%. The CAC 40, CAC, is off by 3.4%. And in the U.S., U.S. futures are lower by 1.7% for S&P futures, 1.7% for Dow futures, and 1.9% for NASDAQ futures. So not a pretty outlook. The Russian ruble, 79.761, is down by 0.6 today against the dollar. This is Bloomberg Surveillance on Bloomberg Radio. Bloomberg Surveillance brought to you by T2 Computing, a new kind of IT solutions company for workflow, mobility, and infrastructure. Let them explain how their expertise can help you gain greater business value. Visit T2Computing.com for more information.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. Tumbling banks leading European stocks toward their lowest since September 2013, and U.S. stock index futures are indicating a lower open. This after Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen's interest rate comments failed to inspire lasting gains. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures down 33 points. Dow E-mini futures down 280. And NASDAQ E-mini futures are down 79. DAX in Germany is down 2.4%. 10-year Treasury is up 1. The yield 1.55%. The yield on the 2-year 0.59%. NYMEX crude oil down 3.5% or 96 cents to $26.50 a barrel. COMEX gold up 3.5% or $41.70 to $12.36.30 an ounce. The euro, $1.1325, the yen, 112.13. Mylan, down more than 13% this morning, this after it shelled out about $7.2 billion to buy Swedish drug maker Meta. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thank you very much. One other market note to the ruble, trading at 79.77, down almost 0.7% on the day. We're talking about the Russian economy. with Daniel Hewitt. He's Barclays senior EMEA economist. And we were talking about the difficult choices ahead of President Putin, given the economic conditions there and the fact that oil prices continue dropping. What's your base case scenario? Are they going to maintain strict budget constraints, or do they abandon budgetary discipline as the election approaches in 2018, raise salaries and pensions, and risk an inflationary spiral?
Well, first of all, they have two elections. They have, this fall, they have parliamentary elections, and then in 2018, in February, they have presidential elections. So they're obviously focused on parliamentary elections, and they're a lot closer, even though the Putin supporters have a strong majority. They're still under more pressure. Putin's popularity has been maintained at very high levels, but his parliamentary group's not as strong. And so they would certainly like to do something to increase the government's popularity. But I think their degrees of freedom are extremely limited at this time. And I think that they will come down in favor of fiscal discipline rather than populist policies at this moment, because I think they risk a lot bigger problem if they let the fiscal go.
Well, we know that Russia has a big geopolitical impact on the world these days, but what about economic on the world, on emerging markets, on the rest of Europe? This is a big country, not necessarily a big economy.
It's a big country, but I would say at this point their impact on the world economy is fairly limited, in that their trade volumes have dropped quite a bit, as their export revenues have fallen, their imports have fallen enormously in reaction to that. So they're less and less of an impact on the economy. I would say they're kind of a bit isolated. Certainly they affect the other CIS countries quite a bit.
Dan, I hope
they're all suffering.
I hope you're glued to your Bloomberg today. And, I mean, there's any number of ways to go on data. Sometimes what I find, Dan Hewitt, is what is not moving is just as important as what is moving. For example, folks, the 10-year yield in 11 basis points, a 156 U.S. 10-year yield, is just jaw-dropping. Dan Hewitt, what's not moving is the Russian ruble. If I extrapolate Brent and certainly West Texas Intermediate, I ought to be at a dollar ruble of 82, 83, whatever. I'm not. Do you just assume that's a use of reserves to support the ruble?
No, I don't think there's any use of reserves whatsoever. What I think is that you don't have a one-to-one parity between oil price changes and the ruble. I mean, this has existed for a while, and this is natural. It's the oil price. Oil is not the only thing that affects the Russian economy. There's other factors too, and so I think it puts some restraints on the ruble movement. The other thing is to realize that the ruble is very much affected by the amount of liquidity that the central bank puts out, and they've been very, very restrained. And they've tried to lean against exchange rate movements in Russia, and I think are having some success. So I think there's probably more confidence in the central bank than existed before. I think for the last year they've acted pretty intelligently, and I think have that situation under control to some extent.
What about the rest of Europe and the smaller countries in Europe?
Good question.
Not just Russia, but with oil prices falling, do they benefit from that in a way that the Russians as producers do not?
Exactly. All Eastern European countries are benefiting from improved current account balances because of lower energy costs. It's been a major, major factor. If you look at Poland and Hungary, Romania, in all cases, they've had some pretty strong improvements in their current account situation. So what they used to have pretty entrenched deficits, and now they're nearer balance, or even in some cases, in certainly Hungary's case, they have pretty strong surpluses.
Mike, I'm so glad you brought this up, and Dan, I think you nailed it with Poland. I just put Euro Zloty. We can do that on Bloomberg on Thursdays. Euro Zloty out on Bloomberg Radio Plus. And this is the third bout of strong euro, weak Polish zloty since 2009.
Yeah.
All the others have ended abruptly. Do you assume a stochastic, pointy, abrupt end to this, or is this a new structural plane we're going to for Eastern Europe, which is weak currency versus Germany and the Netherlands?
Well, in the case of Poland, they have got some political uncertainty, which is very much affecting the Zloty euro rate. So their weakness represents a lot of uncertainty. They've got a new election in October, new government, the peace government, and the peace is going the way of Hungary under Orban, and is changing the way things work there quite a bit, and that's causing lack of confidence in the institutions in Poland. So that's, I think, a new shift. It certainly happened in Hungary. Hungary had a shift like that previously. Now the markets have adjusted, and the foreign is now down at another level.
Dan, here, one more question. As an economist, I want to ask you a trader's question. What's the correlation in emerging markets now? Is there a tight correlation between this one, the other one, or not?
Well, I think right now we're going to have to look at fundamentals. And countries with strong fundamentals are acting as safe havens and doing better, while those with somewhat weak fundamentals that have let things go a little bit, they're suffering. They're highly correlated with each other. So I think you have to break it into two groups.
Thank you so much, Jenny. We greatly appreciate it. With Barclays, our senior emerging market economist in this time of turmoil. Mike, I don't even know where to go when I say equities, bonds, currencies, commodities, other than selected items are grinding now. The yen is doing better, actually, over the last half hour or so. I can't say the same about full faith and credit paper. I mean, it's just grinding down lower yield. No other way to put it.
There is extraordinary correlation today among all asset classes. I don't know if we've mentioned gold. Did you mention gold earlier? Rocketing higher, 3.4%. It's up $40 to $1,234.90. We were at $1,800-something just a couple of days ago. So there is obviously some sort of major concern going on in investors' minds about what's happening in financial markets today. And that we're seeing oil fall, stocks fall along with it, bonds rising and yields dropping, and the dollar, for the most part, is falling. As you mentioned, it's a little bit stronger against the yen right now, but it's down against the euro. The euro is at 113.37. Mario Draghi cannot be happy about that.
Yeah, I think there's that, and I just think there's also the abrupt moves. I mean, you talk about Trichet-like brutal moves as well. I mentioned Russian ruble not moving all that much, but we need to underscore, particularly for those of you just joining us worldwide as we go into another hour here of the show, to remind futures negative 40 with Dow futures solidly negative 300. We are better than that right now, but not by much. And I can't tell you, Mike, I can't tell you looking at the screen where we'll be in 20 minutes, let alone 2 hours. The yield structure, the two-year yield, has given back, Mike, all, and I mean all, of the optimism of a higher rate structure seen over the last 3, 4, and even 5 months.
Well,
it's just evaporated.
It's interesting because we have a major risk factor coming up at 10 o'clock this morning for all the markets with Janet Yellen. It's unlikely she'll say much different, but you never know. And so with markets as nervous as they are, I'm sure a lot of people will be listening in today on Bloomberg Radio and Television. We'll carry her comments. Question and answer session. She'll read the same statement. Question and answer session.
Well, let's go through a formal data check. You need that this morning, and we do that across equities, bonds, currencies, commodities, peripheral Europe, all the spreads wider. I haven't looked at those charts, but nevertheless, peripheral Europe showing some of the tension Michael McKee was talking about earlier. Futures negative 34, Dow futures negative 284. The yield again 1.55%, the 2-year 0.60%, 30-year bond on a tear that hasn't been talked about 2.39%. Percent. West Texas, 26.46, a little better than 20 minutes ago. Brent crude threatening 30. We're not there yet. 30.25 with a good $4 spread widening out as West Texas moves weaker. The yen, 112.33. Stay with us with Markets on the Move. Bloomberg Surveillance.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.